be positive. My phone at the same time. Mr. Gill, I want to welcome you here on behalf of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. This committee is not a stranger to you, and you are here to be interviewed for the position of Inspector General that will become vacant on the 31st of January. Sorry, the 31st of December, and we have had the pleasure of going through your CV, and members have, I'm sure by now, had a very good look at the CV. Very familiar with. There was an agreement, honourable members, that phones will be switched off. And I hear a phone making a noise. I don't think it's necessary, Mr. Gilder, to introduce you to the committee. There are some new members here. But this is the newly constituted JSCI since the elections. We'd like you to feel comfortable. This is an interview. It's not an interrogation. It's not an investigation. And we'd like you to feel comfortable. I just take you through one or two things, and the rest of the members would perhaps want to also question you on aspects of the job and perhaps aspects of your CV. Perhaps we'll just have an introductory word from you, Mr. Gilder.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I didn't suspect a few years ago I would be appearing before you again so soon. I'm not sure what kind of introductory word you want from me, Jefferson, but it's a pleasure to be in front of the committee again. I've applied for this particular position because I think it's a role that interests me. Which I believe passionately is crucial to the integrity of our intelligence services. The oversight that this committee performs and the Inspector General performs are crucial to the integrity and the reputation and therefore the efficacy of our services. And I thought it was a challenging position, and when I saw that it was coming up, I thought it's something that I would like, a challenge I would like to take on. Thanks.
Mr. Gilder, I see you have a number of degrees. Perhaps you want to comment?
A number of degrees?
Yes.
Academic degrees. I only have one, Chairperson. I have a Bachelor of Arts degree majoring in English and Philosophy, an incomplete honours degree in English and an incomplete honours degree in philosophy. Politics took over. Chair and hasn't stopped since.
You've had various positions in your life since you matriculated. You want to tell us just about some of them as they appear on your CV?
Yes, sir. After matriculating and doing my then national service with the old SADF, which was still 9 months in those days, I went to WITS and did my degree. After graduating, I was elected to the new SAS National Executive, initially as deputy head of their cultural arm, subsequently as head of their cultural arm. And after finishing my second term, I went into exile, 76, worked with, joined the ANC in London, also worked with a mobile workers theatre group to earn my living and doing work with the ANC. I went to MK in Angola in 1979, did my training there. Was a member of the editorial board of the MK journal Dawn. After my training in Angola, I went to Soviet Union for intelligence training. After coming back, I was eventually appointed the head of ANC intelligence in Botswana, where I was until 89. Came back to go South Africa in 91. I worked at Matla Trust, initially as head of communications and for a brief time as deputy director before being given the call by the late John Chantler. To join the services, I was appointed general manager of foreign offices at SAS in 95. 96, I was promoted to DDG in SAS. In 2000, I was transferred to NIA as DDG operations. 2003, I was appointed director general of home affairs. 2005, I was appointed coordinator for intelligence.
Honorable members, I'm going to hand over to you. You've heard Mr. Gilder give you some background there of his very interesting life. I'd like to hand over to the rest of the members for further questions. The Honorable Fichler.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Fichler, N.B. Fichler, as the Chair is saying. Mr. Gilder, seemingly I would have called you a rolling stone. I hope you are gathering moss. Seemingly you have been moving from place to place. I do not know whether you were looking for cleaner pastures or not. But I hope that you are aware that is a very, very important job that you are in. Why did you want to move from where you are to this job?
Sorry, Chairperson, I'm not sure I understand the question.
The Honourable Member is asking you, why do you want this job? You've had so many jobs and you're moving and, you know, are you moving to greener pastures? What is it that has attracted you to this job?
Thanks, Chairperson. Sorry, Honourable Member. As far as the Rolling Stone description goes, I think most of my life I've been deployed. I've never, except in my younger years, applied for jobs for greener pastures. I retired as coordinator of intelligence in 2007, at the end of 2007. At the time, largely for personal reasons, I needed a bit of a break. I've been retired for just about 2 years now. At the time of my retirement, I had said to myself and to close comrades and friends that I hadn't seen myself retiring to sit on the stoop for the rest of my life, that I was ready for a new challenge if it was offered. And I felt that this particular post is the kind of challenge which suits my particular experience and temperament. So it's not the search for greener pastures. Retirement is quite green enough for me. But it's the kind of challenge that I think I would like to tackle.
Anybody else? The Honourable Khanawa?
Well, I also want to introduce myself. That's my name, I'm sure you, Tanyao. You don't need to pronounce it, but it's just that it stands there. I want to hear from you. Actually, I just want to ask you to blow your own trumpet. Just blow your trumpet with regards to this job. Why do you think you are fit for this job? And in answering the question, I would also be very happy if you could touch on one or two achievements in your career life that you are particularly proud of. One or two. You are free to do that. That you are particularly proud of. I see you have been in a number of areas. Choose one or two and tell us more about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Member. I think in answering your question, I would say, first of all, that I believe this job, as I said in the letter that accompanied my application, primarily requires two things, the confidence of the services and the confidence of the public. Having worked in the services for many years and understanding how they work, understanding how they function, understanding how they think, and understanding the challenges that they face, I believe that I could succeed in having their confidence. I also think that in the work I've done, which has involved some kind of a public face, thinking particularly at Home Affairs and to some extent at NICOC, I believe I have some confidence from the public too. I think I do have a reputation of openness and integrity. Well, I hope I do. At least that's what they say. And I think those two combinations are important for this particular post, because the Inspector General, like the JSCI, is really the public's guardian of the intelligence services and must have their confidence, but to do so must also have the trust of the services. Also, having had experience of all the services, NIAS, which are now going to be one service, and NICOC, and also experience in other arms of government, it would also be more difficult if I was Inspector General and conducting an investigation or inspection for the services to hide things from me, because I know how the systems work. I know how they should work, and I know the tricks in hiding the naughty things that might be done. And I think that's an important quality to have for an Inspector General. In terms of one or two achievements, I think one of them, in my own view, is the time I spent at Home Affairs, where I, with ministers that I worked for with and the management I worked with, developed a turnaround strategy for the department, a strategy which was beginning to have effect and take root and have an impact. But unfortunately, I was redeployed to NICOC before I could see the fruits of that. And I think that if you look back at the particular efforts we made at Home Affairs at that time, I think you will see that that we had a very comprehensive strategy and we're beginning to have success in implementing it. I think also at NICOC, the time I spent at NICOC was I managed to turn NICOC into an effective coordinating mechanism. It was beginning to organize itself in a way which both had the support of the services and was beginning to make a bit better impact on the client. And I'm proud of that achievement too. So let me stop at two because you said one or two. I don't want to blow my trumpet too loud.
Honourable members? Any further questions? Mr. Landers? Honourable Landers?
I was waiting to hear if there were any follow-ups. Mr. Gilder, my name is Llewellyn Landers. It's going to sound like this question I'm asking is
irrelevant given what I'm reading in your CV, but I'm going to ask it anyway, if only for the record. What relevant legislation and entities and structures of the intelligence community are you familiar with? Can you just give the committee an indication of those, please? And if you leave anything out, it's not a train smash.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Well, obviously, as a part of the leadership of the services since the time of amalgamation, I've been quite intimately involved in the different stages or eras of legislation governing intelligence. But more recently, when I was coordinator for intelligence, I headed up a task team set up by the then minister to review intelligence legislation, with a team which made a number of recommendations. So I'm familiar with the National Strategic Intelligence Act, the Intelligence Services Bill, the Oversight Act. I was part of, it was that team, as some members of the committee will know, that drafted the Protection of Information Bill. And I made a submission to this committee as a private citizen, or not this committee, the ad hoc committee, on that bill last year, I think. The communications legislation I've been familiar with. I think most of the legislation I've been familiar with over the years. Have I left anything out? As my CV shows, I've worked for NIA, I've worked for SAS, I've worked for NICOC, and of course Home Affairs. I've worked with the NCC when I joined the services, and also the time when I was DDG Operations at NIA. The NCC operated in a more integrated way in NIA, and I was actually responsible for a time for their overall supervision. But also when I was at SAS, we worked closely with the precursor of the NCC. I'm a bit familiar with the OIC, although that was set up when I was at Home Affairs, so I wasn't involved in its formation. I'm very familiar with the Academy. In my retirement, I've been doing some training and consultancy for the Intelligence Academy, and was always intimately involved in training issues when I was in the services. And of course, I've had sat on the Ministerial Executive Committee, so I'm familiar with all the arms of the services. I've been familiar with the IG's office, especially during my time at NICOC. And the task team I've mentioned had representatives from all the entities, so I've worked closely with all of them over the years.
Anybody else, honourable members? I see the honourable Kutsi is wanting to have a go at this thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason in connection with your answer, just given that you've worked with all these agencies, what would you say is your knowledge of all these acts in the intelligence?
So the knowledge of the legislation?
Yeah.
I would like to think I have a reasonably good knowledge of them, but at different times, obviously certain different legislations have been more directly pertinent to what I've been doing. But as I said, chairing the task team that I've referred to, which was about 2 years ago now, we had to look at all the legislation. So I would regard myself as having a good knowledge of the legislation, but of course I'm not one of those who retains them verbatim in my mind, but I certainly have a good understanding. And also I've been at least partially involved in the history of their evolution through different amendments and so on. So I think I have a good knowledge of the legislation.
Anybody else? General Maki?
Thank you, Chairperson. My question would be on you were in the intelligence community for some time, and you have been doing work all along. What would the difference be in terms of the workings as an investigator of complaints and what you were doing before?
Thanks, Honourable Member. Look, I think there are a number of differences. What I was doing before involved conducting, or at least managing, the conduct of intelligence. And our targets, if you like, were outside. They were either in the foreign arena or in the domestic criminal or terrorist, etc., arena. The principles of investigation would be similar, and I think the experience of conducting intelligence investigations is one that would stand an Inspector General in good stead as well. But an Inspector General's role in conducting investigations and inspections is really closer in many respects to an Auditor General's kind of role. It's looking at issues of compliance. It's looking at systems and whether those systems have been complied with and whether they're adequate. It's looking at also at the more traditional kind of investigations, especially when investigation, a complaint or an allegation of a breach. I actually sat in 1999 on an investigative commission set up by the late Joe Entlantla with the current Inspector General to investigate an incident where Nia had been caught spying on the German embassy with a camera across the street. Some older members of the committee might remember that incident. And we conducted a pretty thorough investigation. And a few months later, I was then appointed DDG Operations and was then in charge of the unit that had been responsible for the breach. So I've been on both sides in that particular experience. So as I'm saying in brief, there are lessons from intelligence investigations that you can draw into an Inspector General's type of investigations. But there's much more, as I say, of an audit function and a monitoring function and an ombud function in the Inspector General's role, which requires a broad understanding of the systems, both operational and administrative systems of the services. And I have functioned both in the administrative and the operational sides in the services.
The Honourable... Sorry,
are you able to follow up first? Honourable Mackie? Thank you, Chairperson. So don't you think, because maybe most of the people who are still in the community, due to the fact that you know what's happening in there, might not be cooperative or I'd be afraid if there's something sinister that they are doing. Thank you.
Well, if there's something sinister that they're doing, they should be afraid. Very, very afraid. I think it's very important to stress a point that I've made already, that the Inspector General has the trust and confidence of the services. And I think having worked in the services, knowing many of the people and knowing the systems and knowing the challenges they face, that's an advantage. I think it's going to be important for an Inspector General to build that trust over time. And for me, the job of Inspector General would require a very difficult and delicate balance between building that trust on the one hand, but conducting your investigations fearlessly and without favor on the other hand. And obviously, if you do find something untoward in the services that you have to investigate and report on, it's going to affect your relationship with the services. But I think in the long run, by showing that your integrity, you're showing your integrity, showing your determination, the long-term effect is to make the services more compliant and to build their confidence that you operate without fear or favor. So I think it's a difficult relationship and one that has to be worked on, but it's a necessary challenge. You can't be an Inspector General or an Ombudsman of any kind without being forthright and precise and courageous in your investigations. But you need the cooperation of those you're investigating, so you have to find that balance. It's a delicate balancing act, as I said.
The Honourable Dludlow and then the Honourable Ntabeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I ask my question, I'd like to declare that I know Mr. Dilda. We have shared a spooky life in the past, working for the same department within the MCMK. My question really relates to the question on legislation that had been asked earlier on. As a follow-up, you do say that you had made a presentation to the Ad Hoc Committee on the Protection of Information Bill. Broadly speaking, what did your presentation entail?
I had been concerned at the time that the public debate about the bill had been rather one-sided, alleging that the bill sought to further restrict access to government information. And I thought that the public debate was missing the point. And the thrust of my submission to the Ad Hoc Committee was really to try and make the point, firstly, that the intention of the legislation, the intention of protecting government information, was not to protect it from the public, but to protect it from government's adversaries. It's unfortunate that information that gets into the public gets to adversaries. So government protects the information in order to keep secret that which it's doing, the knowledge of which by its adversaries would disable the government, disempower the government, and all governments do that, and all private organizations do that, and the JSCI does that. The reality of my experience, particularly when I was DDG Operations in NIA and responsible for information security in government, was that government had actually been very lax in protection of its information, that the intention of the bill having been involved, at least in the conceptual drafting of it, was precisely to tighten up and make it more clear and more precise, because we were still functioning, and we are still functioning, on the old apartheid era protection of information legislation. So the attempt was really to modernize the legislation and to make it more appropriate to a democracy. So my representation was really to try and argue the other side, because it seemed to me nobody was representing that side of the story.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gilda, Honorable Ntabeni, Stella is the first name. For the past few years, people have lost confidence in the intelligence community because they've been accused of being driving certain political agendas. Now you, claiming that you are ready, if you were to be given this position, how do you seek to win back the public's confidence but they must have confidence in the intelligence services. Let me make an example. What would happen in the case whereby there's a case involving senior leadership in our government, and then you get an instruction to tell your people to stop investigating myself, if it's me, I'm just making an example. What would you do on that scenario? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. I'd go back into retirement. I think, no, I'm joking. I said I'd go back into retirement. Well, I think the first part of your question would partly answer the second part of your question. Look, I believe strongly indeed, as you correctly say, that over the last few years, public confidence in the services has been shaken by a number of factors, but it goes back before the events of 2005 and so on. I have always been concerned that the public, the media, and many in government have this old-fashioned notion of intelligence from the apartheid days. We still call us spooks. Honorable Claudia just called herself a former spook too. And they assume that what intelligence does is listen to people's conversations and have cameras in their bedrooms all day. There's a complete misconception in the public. Based on James Bond movies and spy movies and what we know from the apartheid years. So that predated, if you like, the more recent events, and the recent events perhaps just aggravated that misperception of intelligence. I don't think it would just be an Inspector General's task to change that. I think it's a task of the committee, of the community, of government as a whole. But as I've said earlier, I think the Inspector General, together with the committee, or the two arms of oversight, whose job in a way it is to give the public assurance and confidence that the services are operating legitimately, legally, and cleanly, and so on, and efficiently. And I would see that as a very big part of an Inspector General's role, is to interface with the public in various ways and to make sure the public is aware that there is an Inspector General, what his or her role is, and where possible to make public the particular investigations that he or she has conducted. In other words, to build up a relationship with the public which seeks to give them reasonable confidence that their intelligence services are being properly overseen. I think it's very important to the Inspector General to work very closely with the JSCI on this attempt to get the public to have a better understanding of intelligence and, as I said, to be reassured that the services are operating effectively. And I think that's almost a campaign, if you like, on its own that the community needs right now. As you correctly say, the public has lost confidence, and that needs to be rebuilt. Second part of your question, an Inspector General can only be a successful Inspector General if she or he works without fear or favor. And that's why I made the joke of having to go back into retirement if I got confronted with that example. But that is really a joke. And I would feel obliged if I was appointed to this position to be able to act in that way. And it would be very difficult, but I think I have the experience and hopefully the maturity to be able to do that. To resist political interference in my investigations. At the same time, I think it's also very important for the Inspector General to be able to listen to different sides of the story and understand, not jump to conclusions, understand the dynamics and the intricacies and the complexities behind issues that he or she might be investigating, and not be standoffish and say, I don't want to talk to you because you might be trying to influence my investigation. I think the Inspector General must be able to have that balance.
The Honourable Matete.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Let me disclose as well, like Ms. Lodlo, that I have worked with Mr. Gelder before, but our work was transparent. What would you say, Mr. Gelder, if anybody was to say to you that you have seen it all and you have done it all, you have been in your student days a leader in NUSAS, and you were with MK, Matla Trust, Intelligence, Home Affairs, you have done it all and you have made your mark. It's probably time now for you to take it easy and, you know, play with your grandchildren and have it very easy and hang your boots. What would you say to that?
Thanks, Honorable Mansisi. I don't have grandchildren yet.
Just before you respond, there's an addition to that question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to add on to that question that in your response, you also, without appearing to try and put you off, you have been in this community for a very long time, so you know what it is that would need to, what you would need to do to be effective, but you would also have insights on how it is that you would be able to conceal certain things or to, you have been so close to the community that you might have problems, and you might not, by the way, you might have problems or you might not have problems of ensuring impartiality and independence in the work that you do.
Thanks, Honorable Members. Honorable Mansisi, I don't have grandchildren yet. Working on it. I did do exactly what you suggested I should do 2 years ago. I did decide to take it easy. I'm still quite young. I took what's called early retirement. I'm not yet 60. And I did it because it was a moment in my life where I just needed a break, needed to think about things and take a break. As I said right at the beginning, I did so with a clear understanding that that I was not going to disappear forever. And it seemed to me that this particular position is almost ideal, if you like, for the kind of experience I've had and for all the things that you say I've done. Because it's a position which is not an implementing position, which is the kind of positions I've had through my career, but it's a monitoring. And having done all that implementation in different fields, I feel that would give me the advantage in trying to doing a kind of monitoring, auditing, ombudsman type of job. In relation to the Honorable Claude's question, I think it would be a challenge in a sense, but it's certainly one that I would be very conscious of. But I still think it weighs on the scale in favor of an advantage, because knowing the services, knowing how things work, knowing some of the people involved, would give me an advantage to be able to see when things are perhaps being hidden from me or from the committee or other people responsible for overseeing the services. I don't think I would. I think I've been in many jobs where I've been required to be impartial. Starting, if you like, from Matla Trust, where although we were accused of being an ANC front, but every job I've had has been accused of being an ANC front. But, Matla Trust did voter education for everybody, and was in an alliance like the Independent Forum for Electoral Education with a wide range of organizations, some of which were thought to be aligned with other parties. So right from those days of Matla Trust, I think I learned coming back from exile very quickly on the importance of being able to be professional and impartial in the work I led. And certainly coming into government intelligence in 95, again, that was a learning experience. Working in Home Affairs with Minister Buthelezi for a year or so, I've had the experience of the challenges of professionalism and impartiality, and I think I fared quite well. So I don't see that as a major problem, and I see it more of an advantage.
Honourable members, it seems there's no more questions. Mr. Gilder. Sort of coming to the end of the interview now. Is there anything else that you would like to draw the committee's attention to that might be relevant to the work you're going to do or this interview? It's not, if you don't, I'm just giving an opportunity if, in case we haven't touched on anything that we might have overlooked or that you'd like to draw us attention to. Now is the time.
Thank you, Mr. Jett. We've spoken about a lot of things, and I just want to make a comment regarding the amendment that was passed regarding the grandchildren. I just trust that the reason why you took early retirement is to see if you could do something about the fact that you're not a grandpa yet, and if you decide to return to your work because of the fact you didn't succeed in that sort of approach. So, but I'm impressed with your experience. I'm impressed with your declaration about the impartiality and independence. But you must pardon me for asking this question. Taking and with respect, taking into an account where you're coming from and the pressure that is on people in a position of an inspector general, will you be able, as the advert of Castle Arc said, will you be able to stand the test of times in a situation which was sketched by my colleague?
Well, thanks, Honourable Member. I believe I would. I think, as I've just said, throughout my career in government, I have had to be impartial and professional, and I think I've acquitted myself well. I think if you ask those that worked with me, or especially those that supervised me, I think they'll tell you that I have spoken my mind when it had to be spoken, but very politely. On the first part of your question, on the grandchildren, at least my eldest daughter is living with a man now, so the chances are increasing. She hasn't quite talked of marriage yet. No, I believe I can. As I said in response to Honourable Claude, it would be difficult and a challenge, but I think that my experience would stand me in good stead in resisting that kind of pressure, and indeed, although I'm not a beer drinker, standing the test of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What you've just said, and in your challenge, as you said it also in your covering letter, to win the trust and the confidence of the public, would you see this as a very important to be partial and independent.
Absolutely. I mean, the public would need to believe and be assured that the Inspector General, like the committee, are indeed being impartial, independent, and professional in how they oversee the services. And I'm not saying this glibly. That's why I'm saying it would be a challenge to anybody. I think it's also obviously a challenge for a committee like this, not just in South Africa, but in any country. And I have interfaced with many committees and inspector generals in other parts of the country during various travels I've done looking at other intelligence communities. So these are standard challenges for intelligence oversight. But I believe I'm up to that challenge. And I think I have a record to show that.
Thank you. I'm not really trying to irritate you, and the question I'm going to pose can be answered, or you can just perhaps decline not to answer it, and it will not be held against you. I have listened to you throughout, and I started asking myself some questions and said, does this man have weaknesses? Now, maybe if you could just share one or two weaknesses with the team. But as I say, you are free to say, no, I don't want to share my weaknesses with anybody. Or I can, if you want to do it. So you are free. It will not be held against you.
Mr. Gilder, the Honorable Genauer has, in fact, told you you don't have to answer the question, so don't feel obliged. He's not going to be he's not going to be annoyed if you don't.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Hanyako, I'm not sure if I should answer your question in front of the media, although fortunately the person from the media is somebody I know quite well. And he probably knows my weaknesses. refuse to answer that question. I certainly don't want to avoid the question, but having myself sat in or chaired a number of interview panels and also asked that question, I've discovered that the candidates will always give as weaknesses things which actually are strengths. He would say something like, I work too hard, or I am so I'm a workaholic, or I tend not to delegate, or things like that. So I don't want to give a weakness that's actually a strength, so it's a bit difficult to answer that question. But to be very honest with the committee, as long as my friend in the media will allow this to be off the record, if I have...
Mr. Gilder, this is an open meeting, and I would not want to be responsible for you talking off the record here and then finding yourself to be on the record. So, because the honorable member has given you a way out, I would sooner you not talk off the record than talk off the record and have yourself quoted tomorrow. The honorable member will not be offended, and certainly the committee is very conscious of the fact that you have tried to answer the question very honestly, and I think that would be sufficient for us. We don't want to start hearing some of those classified information. Satisfied, Honorable Canal?
Yes.
Mr. Gilder, then I don't know if there's anything else you want to draw our attention to. I think this, the interview has been quite thorough. If there isn't anything else, perhaps you just... Is there anything else? Otherwise, I can just wrap up the interview.
No, thanks, Chair. Just to thank the committee very much for considering my application and for your fair and probing questions. I was hoping for some more difficult questions, but I'm happy to leave without them.
Honourable members, I think we have got a very good idea of this candidate, and there's quite sufficient information on the CV also. So on behalf of the committee, Mr. Gill, I'd like to thank you for coming to this interview, and thank you for the very firm and honest manner in which you answered the questions. And we shall let you know at some stage or another what the outcome of the interview is. Thank you very much for coming. Honourable members, we have before us now for interview Mr. Dennis Tokosani Dlumo. Mr. Dlumo, there is a button on the panel there. When you talk, you can press the button, and when you're not talking, just cut the mic, otherwise it interferes with the person that is talking. Welcome to these interviews of the JSCI, Mr. Dlumo. We know you traveled very far to get here. Hope your trip was a nice one. You didn't have any problems. We are interviewing for the position of Inspector General, a position that will become vacant on the 31st of December. We take it that you have applied for this position because you are available. The members have all gone through your CV, and so they are very familiar with your achievements and all your escapades. I will just take you through some of the more important items of your CV. And after that, I will hand over to the rest of the members for questions they might want to put to you. As they question you, those members that question you will introduce themselves at that time. I thought perhaps we save time by introducing ourselves one by one to the every candidate as they come. But this is the newly constituted Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. And apart from one or two members that are not available today, this is the full complement. So if I might be allowed to proceed immediately into some of the issues on your CV. And we'd like you to feel comfortable. There's no interrogation here. There's no cross-examination here. It's a very friendly interview. We are trying to find the appropriate candidate, and we're trying to do it in the most friendly and respectable manner. So I don't think you need to be anxious and concerned that you'll be confronted here. It's all going to be very nice, and I think you will leave here feeling very happy. You have a number of degrees, Mr. Dlumo. You want to tell us something about these degrees that you have?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Honorable members, for the opportunity. I studied at the University of Durban, Westville, where I did political science and public administration as my major subjects. I also did a little bit of English, Afrikaans, and a number of others. I then proceeded to do a BA honors at the same university. I had started at the University of Zululand, where I was expelled, so I transferred some of my courses from Durban-Westville University to complete the BA degree, which I got at Durban-Westville University. I then did a master's and an honors degree at Durban-Westville and a master's at the University of Pretoria. My master's was on parliamentary oversight, and I'd interviewed former members of the committee and had shared some of the findings and experiences I'd had with regards to parliamentary oversight. Thanks.
You presently working for a institution or a committee called the Committee of Intelligence and Security Service of Africa, abbreviated as CISA. Can you tell us about this, CISA?
In 2002, there was intelligence work being done in Southern Africa on a case which at that time was indeterminate. And that later turned out to be activities related to mercenarism. The intelligence which the South African Secret Service collected at the time was shared with the Central Intelligence Organization of Zimbabwe, which then led to the joint cooperation between these two organizations, resulting...
Chairperson, can I just find out? Because it's an open meeting, I wouldn't like to know what I'm not supposed to know. If that could be made clear, I'm not very sure. Thank you.
The honourable member is requesting, and I think rightly so, whether the information which you are going to disclose, we have an open meeting today because it's interviews and the public has an interest in the interviews and the candidates that we are interviewing. And so this meeting is open. I'm sorry I forgot to disclose that to you. So we would not want you to disclose any classified information here. And I think just from what I'm hearing now, the honourable member was just quicker than what I am to stop you. And I don't know how you feel about that. But unless you are comfortable that the information that you are disclosing is not classified, I'd allow you to continue. Otherwise, I'd perhaps ask you to be more discreet in dealing with matters that are public knowledge and not going deep into operational matters and matters that should not really be disclosed in an open meeting.
Chairperson, thanks. No, this is in the public domain. It is available on the CISA website as part of the information leading to the creation of CISA, and I have fielded a few interviews in the Sudan, Angola, and in Nigeria around these developments. So they are already in the public domain. The case itself has already been concluded. The people were convicted, and the information has actually been in the public domain. I wanted to start with the practical things because my view is that it would be useful for the committee to have an understanding that one brings in practical experience related to real intelligence work and understanding how intelligence operates as that is one of the criteria. So if I may continue, Chairperson, following this interaction, a meeting was then convened in Angola where various services of the continent wanted to see how best to preserve this best practice of collaboration between different intelligence agencies. The end result of that collaboration was then the setting up of a commission which was to look at how to make sure that more African organizations could collaborate. The end result was that in 2004, following some meetings which were hosted here in South Africa, and in fact, the very first workshop which was held here in South Africa saw a number of members of intelligence and security services of the continent attend the debate of the Joint Standing Committee of that particular year. I think it was 2003. So they, for the first time, some of them got to be exposed to the oversight process. So in Abuja in 2004, on the 26th of August, this organization called the Committee of Intelligence and Security Services of Africa was set up. And it was then adopted as part of the security structures of the African Union through the decision of the
heads of state and government of January 2005, which is called Decision 62, which then called on CISA to work very closely with the African Union, and now the main client for the intelligence being produced by CISA is the chairperson of the African Union Commission.
And is it correct that you are presently the executive secretary?
That is correct, sir.
Honorable members, I'm going to hand over to you now. I saw the Honorable Fichler. Honorable Fichler.
Thank you, Chair. As you have heard, my name is N.B. Fichler. Sometimes when a person is working on a job, he likes it, he loves it, he enjoys it, and he does not want to move, he wants to retire on that particular job. Seemingly, he had been working in many types of jobs, and now you want to move to another job today. What makes you to move away from the jobs that you have been doing? Say, no, I want to move away from operation to do oversight. Is it? Perhaps you do not enjoy those jobs. Mm-hmm. You feel this is a better job. What could be the reason? Thank you.
A chairperson, intelligence for me is a calling, it's not a job. Yes, I like it. I love it. But there's one important thing that I realized long ago when I was introduced to political philosophy. And the first thing that I realized was that the main reason for the formation of the state is the provision of security. Everything else follows from that. In our constitution, we talk about two interdependent freedoms with regards to security, freedom from fear and freedom from want. These two, for me, are indivisible because there can be no development in a country unless there is security. There can be no security unless there is a development. I believe that I bring into the intelligence profession a very important aspect, that is the appreciation of the existence of the polity, which has to be done in keeping with our constitutions and our laws. So intelligence is just but one of the actors in this environment. I believe that I have to be a rounded human being. I believe that change is good. I believe that progress is good, and I believe that I can make an added value to that process. I believe that oversight is about improving intelligence. It is about making the services effective. It is about making sure that there are systems that work. It is about making sure that there are well-motivated officers who know their responsibilities to the country and the constitution and the laws that govern their conduct. So applying for the post of the Inspector General, in my view, can help me add value to the work that is being done within the South African intelligence community. I have learned a lot having been on the African continent. I have seen how intelligence and security services can run countries down. And I think that with some of the insights that I have, I can help make intelligence work effective, focused, but more importantly, I can help us all feel safer and more secure by making sure that those who are supposed to do the intelligence and security work do so in keeping with the laws and provisions of our own constitution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Hanauer.
Thank you, Chair. I'm N.M. Hanauer, as you see it there. Now, I don't know if my my ears did not deceive me. I think in your introduction, you said something like you studied a bit of English and Afrikaans. Am I correct in saying that? Because I'm just trying to quote you.
Did you say that? Yes.
Okay. Now, my question is about blowing one's trumpet. In other words, I want to make it open that you tell this committee why it should appoint you, because we have a list of people who have applied for the post. Now, you say you are the right one. Now, in Afrikaans, I'm not really interviewing in Afrikaans. Don't, we mustn't confuse this. I'm just saying this to support what I want you to tell us. We say, Ajagals, praise, say, Eyesterd. Now, I want you to do that. I don't say you're a jackass, but I want you to do that, to praise your own tail. So it's open. There are things that we have mentioned in your CV. Maybe certain things, you know, were left out, you know, because if you want to send us a volume, now you are now free to, you know, add to what you have indicated in your CV. Just blow your trumpet and say you appoint me, because then you go on and on. I'll be satisfied.
Strength, your strength, away. Why do you want this job?
First, I have been associated with the intelligence community since its inception. I believe that I know the intelligence community inside out. Secondly, I have been working with the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. I have been involved in workshops to help improve the understanding and insights on the work that needs to be done. I have worked with the South African Secret Service. Part of my job at present is as a result of my association with the South African Secret Service. Before then, I worked at the Intelligence Academy, and with that, I know the training and development needs that need to be given to the intelligence services. And as the former Minister of Intelligence Services used to say, you cannot transform that which you don't know. You cannot supervise that which you don't know. You cannot make sure that people walk the straight and narrow unless you've got the experience of having been in the field, and I bring that to the job. I have been, together with my colleagues, given medals for the work that we have actually been doing. We have been honored for group work, which means that I would still be able to put a team together, work with different personalities. But I think there is an important, even more important point, which I've already alluded to, is that coordinating intelligence on the African continent has made me travel far and wide and to see how people do things differently. And there are a lot of things which I sometimes refer to as South African exceptionalism. We always think that there is a lot which is different in what we are doing in our country, but in some places, there are places where we're actually far, far, far behind. There are countries that are already doing their planning, taking into account the needs in languages that China and India, as new powers that are rising, are going to need. They are doing second-order training, looking at new emerging powers such as Turkey, Brazil, and others. I believe that with this kind of experience, you see, the key thing in the job of the Inspector General, it points out to a number of things. It talks to monitoring. Monitoring has to do with the day-to-day work. The systems that are in place, are they working? Are they effective? But it has to do with review, meaning we have to look after
the horse has left the stable and say, what is it that we could have done differently? What is it that we can ensure we can do differently in order to make intelligence work better in our country? But I believe also that we need to be more proactive. And part of this work of the Inspector General in counterintelligence and intelligence matters must be to say, what plans do we have for the future? Is the planning that is being done, is the training and development, is the recruitment of new talent that is going into the services? All of these things, they're not just about here and now. They're about making South Africa secure and to continue to be relevant in the context of the African continent, but more importantly, in terms of the developments that are taking place in the world. It is not only theory that I know. It is not the intellectual background. I have published on intelligence. I have partly contributed to books. I have been brought in as a member of the African Security Sector Network to do training for other countries, which remains classified for that purpose.
Well, thank you very much. I think that suffices. I think you can go on and on. I think it suffices, but you have read my mind, because the second question was going to be about your achievements, and you have already touched on receiving medals and so on. I was going to ask you to share with us some achievements that you are very proud of, but I don't think we need to go into that now. You have already covered me. You can read one's mind, so let's leave it at that. The last one is just, the last question from me, it's just about your weaknesses, and I still want to emphasize that if you don't want to share your weaknesses with us, straight away you just say, no, I can't share my weaknesses with anybody. Because obviously as a human being, you have the good side and the bad side. And sometimes people, you know, are not afraid to share the bad side, but some are not prepared to do that. And it will not be held against you. I think this is important. If you say no, I don't share my weaknesses with the panel. Just say so, and we go to the next question. But if you feel there are certain things that might be very important for us to know, you can say that openly. There's no problem. Thank you very much.
The member is, in fact, telling you you're not obliged to answer that question, and so it's up to you.
Chairperson, I am always accused of being a slave driver.
Can you hear it? You heard the weakness there.
He's a slave driver.
Honourable members, can we further Mr. Landers? Honourable Landers?
Chairperson, as others have done, let me also declare that I am one of the JSCI members interviewed by Mr. Ndlomo for his master's degree. Mr. Ndlomo, quite obviously you would have extensive knowledge of the relevant legislation and the entities that form part of the intelligence community in South Africa, but just for the record, if nothing else, can you speak to us about them? Tell us what you know about them.
Chairperson, the Intelligence Services Act, Act 65 of 2002, covers the different intelligence structures of the Republic. They include the South African National Academy of Intelligence, SANAI, the National Intelligence Agency, the South African Secret Service, and then, of course, we have since created, though not on a statutory basis, the National Communications Center. We've got, on a legislative basis, COMSEC, which is a private company set up in terms of its own legislation, which is supposed to provide communication security infrastructure. The South African National Academy of Intelligence is to provide training on counterintelligence and intelligence matters. The South African Secret Service has got a foreign mandate, which is to work outside the country except on issues pertaining to military intelligence, which is the mandate of the South African National Defense Intelligence Division. The work that is supposed to be done by the National Intelligence Agency is one of counterintelligence and domestic intelligence work. And then, of course, both SAS and NIA have got departmental intelligence support mandates for the different departments in the Republic. I could go on, I'm not quite sure. Of course, we also have got the South African Crime Intelligence Division. Now,
just 1 minute, Mr. Dudlow. Sorry, Mr. Dudlow. If I might intervene here, because it seems that we are duplicating a process that is quite familiar to you. Is there any intelligence structure, if I might put it to you, to rephrase Mr. Lander's question, is there any intelligence structure that you're not familiar with? It seems that you're familiar with everything, because I don't want you now to start getting into telling us what seems it's quite obvious to you. You work extensively. Perhaps you can short-circuit this answer by telling us if there's something about intelligence structures that you don't know.
Not about the South African intelligence structure. I know most of them, and I have actually written on this particular topic. I'm being cited on it. So I have written about the South African intelligence dispensation, have presented a lot of papers in national and international conferences. I'm quite familiar with the intelligence community.
Mr. Landis? Anybody? Any further questions, honourable members? I see the honourable Markey has a question.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should think partly my question has been answered because the interviewee said something about his job being investigations and complaints, which would more or less be the same as what you will be doing as the Inspector General. Do you see any similarities in terms of the functions or any differences between what you are doing now and what the functions of the Inspector General are? Thank you.
Well, the main difference between the two is that at the moment I am the Executive Secretary responsible for the coordination and production of intelligence for use by the African Union. As the Inspector General, I will be monitoring those activities. So it gives me an insight of what to look for when I am doing the investigation. I've got the understanding of the intelligence process. I've got the understanding of how people would normally go about in investigating these issues. That essentially would be the difference. But there are a lot of similarities. The Inspector General has to manage his office and direct his staff that we are doing. Also, as the accounting officer and chief executive of this African body, we would be expected to come up with plans, prepare reports. I have, on an annual basis, to prepare a report to the conference of CISA, which brings together the heads of intelligence services of 47 African countries at the moment. So that would be a similarity, because the Inspector General is expected on an annual basis to at least provide the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence with a report, or the various ministers issue certificates. So some of the work would overlap, and the experience that one has would then be brought to bear to that function.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd also like to declare that I do know Mr. Dennis Long. Having listened to his blowing the trumpet, as Honorable Kanyako has requested him to do, and subsequent to that, the other responses that he's given to some of the questions that have been raised, I'm not discouraging you from sitting in this interview and applying for this position. But in your words, don't you think you would contribute better in developing people, developing processes and systems within the community rather than performing oversight? Person, if it's an unfair question, he doesn't have to answer.
Yeah, it's to be or not to be, Mr. question.
I want to emphasize this point, Chairperson, with your permission. I think the biggest challenge South Africa faces is making sure that we put the skills that we have at the disposal of a wider community. You see, as an Inspector General, you have the ability of influencing the South African Secret Service, the National Intelligence Agency. You can support the work done by Defense Intelligence, and you can support the work done by the police service in the crime intelligence field. I believe that if you've got the right Inspector General, who has got the kinds of strengths that I have, I believe that the impact would be felt across the intelligence community. There are two ways of developing systems. One is to be inside and to try to do that. I can tell you, I did that as the head of ministerial services, and there is a limit to the extent to which you can do that. And I'm of the view that it is time that one should try and impact on the South African intelligence community differently from the perspective of Inspector General, because there is a responsibility that the office gives you. Instead of only working with hearts and minds, which I've been doing as the head ministerial services, with the position of the Inspector General, it's not only the heart and mind that would help people want to support the processes that you are talking about. They're also obliged by law. And so that is a huge difference. And I'm of the view that collectively, one of the things personally which I think really has not been explored effectively, it's the collaboration between the committee and the Office of the Inspector General in moving the community forward. I think there is a lot of space there, with due respect to everybody. But I still think that the collaboration between the Joint Standing Committee and the Inspector General still has a lot of room to move things forward, even in a way that we might not have explored to date.
Honourable members, the Honourable Kutsi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dorma, I've got a bit of a complicated, a question with more than one division. In what you've said, that your weak point is to be a slave driver. Taking that to an account, how would you see, because you have to make a success to be an Inspector General, how would you see would that influence your relationship with your staff? Because a manager is as good as his staff. And what you've just said, taking the intelligence to the community, what will be your views on impartial and independence? Seeing that there is a provision in the Act, Section 710B of the Act of 1994. And what will you do to win the confidence of the entire intelligence service and that of the community?
Can you be independent? Can you be impartial? And in that manner, win the confidence of both the public and the services and entities in intelligence?
Chairperson, thanks. I believe that a good leader is a good follower. There are many times where I have been in situations where I wasn't quite sure what is the best thing to do. And when that happens, I am not afraid to ask. And that has been a winning formula. I can say this without fear of contradiction. I am working with people from about 16 different countries at the moment. And each one of them has been chosen by their country because they think that they are good at something and that they've got something of value to add. If you look at the reports that have been tabled and the decisions that have been made by successive CISA conferences, they have thanked us for the work we've been doing because we've been making an impact and we've made a difference. So as a founding executive secretary, I have had to provide leadership in this area. Obviously, it is not always good at all times. There have been situations where one has to act tough, take unpopular decisions as the job requires. So I believe that with a vision, you are able to make sure that people buy into what it is you want to achieve, give them the space to do that, and different people will perform differently. Others will require that you spend more time with them, to motivate them, to give them more guidance. Others would like you to stay out of their way so that they can just get done with the job. The important thing is to understand the staff, is to have a clear plan which we collectively develop and they buy into. And that, I believe, is what makes for team spirit, makes for confidence, makes for progress. With regards to impartiality, I made it clear in my motivation for applying this job that I have worked with the Joint Standing Committee constituted by the different parties that exist in Parliament. If you look at the Hansard of the time I spent with the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, you will not fail to find across the political spectrum praises for the professionalism that characterizes who I am. The only thing I have which makes me who I am is my personality and my credibility. When that is gone, there is no me. And so I would not have come at the age of 45 to apply for this job in order to bring my career to an untimely end. I believe that I can definitely rise to the challenge, operate independently, and operate impartially. I think, Chairperson, it would not be out of place to say, I was here when the committee was making attempts at getting previous inspector generals. I took a lot of lessons of what I saw going wrong during that period to heart. And I believe that there would be no reason for that history to repeat itself with me. Winning the confidence, as I said at the beginning, the vision is what really matters. If one comes with a vision, understands the obligations of the job and walks the straight and narrow, I am sure that people who have never seen you would relate to your commitment, to your credibility. For as long as your actions and words do not diverge, and I promise to bring that to the job without fail.
Honorable Maki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a follow-up to a question that was asked earlier. As a founder member, I mean, a founder, executive secretary of CISA, I think your skills are still needed there. And, so you are simply leaving the whole of Africa and they must see to finish. I should think, or maybe you are homesick or something. Wouldn't you think maybe your contribution to the whole continent maybe better than for only one country, which might be your own? How do you see that? Thank you.
Can you be replaced at CISA? That's, I think, what, given that it appears you're doing a good job there, can you be replaced?
Yeah, Chairperson, thanks. My contract in the statutes of CISA was for 4 years, which ended in October. But in June, in Angola this year, they had extended it for a year in order for them to find a new executive secretary. I'm aware that on the 26th of January next year, there will be a meeting of the Succession Planning Committee, which will then decide. We have a term limit. It says 4 years renewable once. They've already renewed it once for a period of 12 months. So they would be going against the statute if they were to renew it again. So that's the reason why I'm here.
Honorable members, I think we sort of exhausted what we are looking for here. Just to ask the candidate whether there's perhaps anything else that you would like to draw your attention to in with regards to what was not covered here. Is there any other aspect that you think the committee hasn't raised, which you would like to raise? You're not obliged, but we don't want you leaving here feeling that there was one aspect of your life that really was going to be a deciding factor, and we never really asked you that question. So take the opportunity now. If there isn't anything else, then we'll conclude the interview, sir.
For now, Chairperson, I don't have anything. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, then, if I might be empowered to thank a candidate for coming here for this interview. He's come a long way, and we wish to thank him for the interview, making himself available, also on such short notice. He was just given less than a week's notice, and we will notify you in due course of the outcome of this interview, and thank you very much for coming, Mr. Dlamini.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, committee member.
Members, we have the next candidate here, and I'm not sure, but I have been told that the candidate should be addressed as Her Excellency Advocate Khadebe. I'm the Chairperson, Cecil Burgess, of the Joint Standing Committee. The other members will introduce themselves when they put questions to you. But welcome to this session. If I'm not addressing you right, Her Excellency, you must please excuse me. Our manners in protocol has sometimes been somewhat incomplete, and
We don't want to address you in an incorrect manner, so if I'm incorrect, please correct me, and we will have no problem addressing you correctly, Your Excellency. But nevertheless, welcome to this interview, and we trust that you will have had a good trip. I know that you came on very short notice, but those are sometimes these unfortunate things. It's not often that we get people outside the country applying for these positions, and so it was a bit of a challenge to get you here on such short notice. But you will notice that there is a button there that you can press when you speak. You press the button, and when you're not speaking, just press it to cut the mic out, because it does interfere if the speaker and the listener's mic is on at the same time. So welcome, Excellency. We have in our possession the CV which you have sent, and so I think you can take for granted that the members have thoroughly gone through your CV. I will just take you through one or two aspects of your CV, and after that I will hand you over to the rest of the committee members who will question you. You need not feel intimidated, none. This is not an interrogation. It's not an investigation. You are not going to be put under any form of pressure here. So I think you must be relaxed and feel comfortable that the members are very, very delicate and very, very soft. So I don't think you need to worry that anything untoward is going to happen here. You can feel comfortable. If I might be allowed to start then, Rexensley. You appear to be an advocate, and it seems that you have some legal qualifications with a number of legal degrees. Do you want to tell us something about that?
Yes. I have a legal background. I obtained my honors degree in Zimbabwe University. I then went on to obtain my master's degree in law at the University of Bond University. Actually, I was the first student to obtain in that university a corporate and commercial master's degree. I was the first one to be issued within that university. I have legal background in terms that in the intelligence community where I used to work, I have worked as a legal advisor. I have worked as a legal advisor also on conditions of services in the intelligence community. I have also worked as a legal advisor at the Independent Broadcasting Corporation. Therefore, my legal expertise are sort of broad, but mainly were done during my employment in the intelligence services.
I see you also have a number of certificates, various certificates of any. I don't want you to go through all of them because you seem to have a whole bag full of them. Are there any of those certificates you might find relevant to the work that you're going, that you might be doing if you were appointed as the Inspector General?
I think all the certificates which are shown on my CV are relevant to the job of an Inspector General. The Inspector General job deals mainly with the legality and compliance of the services. Therefore, my legal background with respect to my legal profession will be able me and enable me to do my work as an Inspector General in a more, efficient way. The other certificates are giving me a corporate experience and are also giving me how to deal with change management. So they actually arm me to deal with the job of the Inspector General.
Just by way of the position you presently hold, can you tell us something about the position that you presently hold?
Yes. I was appointed to represent South Africa as the High Commissioner to all the Caribbean countries under CARICOM, which is the Caribbean Community. I was also accredited to the Caribbean Community itself. I represent South Africa even in Haiti as the ambassador. My main job is to strike relations in the interest of South Africa and national interest of South Africa, and also to form relations in terms of trade, and also to encourage cooperation between the Caribbean and South Africa. The Caribbean are also the only black government we have in this world, which, apart from Africa, which are outside Africa and in the proximity of the United States and in the proximity of all their superpowers. However, our relations, which I have worked in since I was appointed 4 years ago, have been strengthened further by the fact that there's the linkages with the motherland between the Caribbean countries and us. There is also the diaspora issue, which they feel that they are connected by history with South Africa, and they're connected by history with Africa. Therefore, my work in the Caribbean has only strengthened our relationship between South Africa and those countries. And they take South Africa in high regard with respect to those relations. That relation also has assisted us in the multilateral fora, because when we speak about South Africa's interests, say, for instance, in the United Nations, at least South Africa can be assured that the High Commissioner can source 14 votes just at the start, and that 14 votes for South Africa, say in the United Nations, will come from the Caribbean countries. And I think our relationship with the Caribbean is very, very important in terms of the diaspora, in terms of the multilateral fora. Thank you.
Honorable members, I'd like to hand over to you now. Is there other members wanting to put questions to Her Excellency? I see you got your hand up there, Honourable Fischler.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is M.D. Fischler. Your Excellency, seemingly you are a globetrotter. You have been moving around the world. You have seen a lot of the world. I think you have even seen earthquakes and tsunamis, some of those areas. And I think perhaps one of the things that may force you to move around, to move back home. There's no place like home. And the fear of those areas, the abnormal weathers and climates of those areas. What do you think perhaps is the reason for you to want this job better than what you have been doing, all the very good jobs that you have been doing around the world? Thank you.
Honorable member, I think I can bring value to this job. Both my background as an advocate and with the legal profession in my mind, and having worked in the intelligence and understanding how the intelligence community works, the value that I will bring is the value also of having gained, you know, experience of dealing with the outside external experience and the internal experience. So I think I will understand what the job entails. And also just to work in a very transparent manner, and also to be able to be independent and to be able to take decisions. We'll also understand that the job I'm applying, I'll be dealing with departments full of secrecy, but I will uphold the Constitution, and I'll also uphold the secrecy and be able to balance the secrecy and transparent. So I think that I will qualify for this job because I will bring in value into it. And also the Office of the Inspector General, being tasked by the Constitution to monitor the intelligence service. With both my experience of external and internal, I will be able to deal with the impending situation of the Office of the Inspector General.
Honourable members, the Honourable Fanao, and then after that, the Honourable Satole.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is N.M. Khanyao. So that's the right in front of me. It's me. My question is slightly related to what he has just asked you, because as I listened to your response, you were already touching on some of the things that I thought I would get when I asked the question. But let me be open and request you to be in competition now. Remember, when you apply for a post, you are not the only person applying for that post. There are other people who also want to get into that post, although you do not know them, but you are in competition here. Now, we want you to share with this panel some of the qualities you have that perhaps may not have been indicated in your CV that could help you, you know, in this competition. In other words, we want you to blow your own trumpet. You just blow it the way you want. You are free. Now you can blow it. We are listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member. To blow my trumpet, I can assure this committee that I am reliable. I can assure this committee that I uphold the supreme law of this country. And I can assure this committee that I will be able to do the job, given the environment. I have moved in this life to achieve up to this stage of being appointed to represent 14 countries. And I think I am qualified professionally. I am also qualified internally in understanding the intelligence. My relations with the intelligence community and the relations with the external community makes me a wide perspective thinker for this job. this job entails secrecy, as I've mentioned. I am prepared to come up with structures. Those structures that will enable me to comply with my mandate. I am prepared to comply with the acts which are governing this job. In blowing my trumpet also, I think you understand in the intelligence that a lot of jobs are still occupied by men. And I think by me, if I am successful, I will sort of be able to make that blend, that diversity, in terms of the employment in top positions of women. And I am blowing my trumpet, as I said, as an individual having a competition with other people. I think I'm a qualified candidate because I know how the intelligence operates, and I know how the external, you know, intelligence operates. Because in some of the countries where we go, you find that there are intelligence people. So I have worked with intelligence both inside and outside. And I have also contributed to the conditions of service of the intelligence community. I have traveled together with the intelligence community to different countries to see, to do benchmarks in our conditions of services. So I think I have knowledge of how to deal with the job of the Inspector General.
Is there anything that you perhaps would want to warn us against as a candidate in terms of, you know, a weakness? Not that once you share that with us, we will not appoint you, as you have indicated that you are the best candidate. But normally, as a human being, you do have weaknesses, and but you are not obliged to share your weaknesses with us, and will not hold it against you. It's only that, well, you know, to add to what you have just said about yourself in blowing the trumpet. Is there something else that you could share with us as a warning, of course, a witness that we must watch once you are appointed? Thank you.
Before you answer, His Excellency, the Honourable Member is not insisting on an answer, and therefore I would like to caution you, you don't have to answer the question. You're not obliged, and it will not be held against you if you choose not to. Well, you see, we don't want you to come and tell us how you cry and start whistling. You see. Please, you know, you're not obliged, so don't feel intimidated, you know, it's up to you.
Honorable members, I have two lovely sons. They're the best thing God has ever given to me. I think I can, that's my weakness on them. It's as if I can protect them from drugs, from jail. And this is my weakness because every day I pray to say, God, protect them. I think I have told my weakness. It is a weakness of bringing up the children unharmed in the name of God. And that's my weakness.
You think you are overprotected?
Sometimes I think, in my feelings, I feel overprotective to them.
I think it's the Honorable Septoli now.
Thank you, Your Honor, Your Excellency. I am Sheila Shope Sitoli. My inclination is accounting as a subject. But I also want people to account when they are in government. And I insist on that one. I just want you to assure us that when we, and if we give you that post, are you going to come back to this committee to enable us to do our constitutional obligation of holding government to account to the people of the Republic of South Africa? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I know that as I am sitting around this committee, it is a priority committee when it relates to the Inspector General. The Inspector General must report to this committee, and the Inspector General is supposed once a year to at least come and sit and account to this committee about his office, about the compliance of the intelligence services, about the review he has done for the intelligence services. He must also come and report to this office about anything he has found unlawful done by the services. And the Inspector General works to encapsulate the provisions of the Constitution. The Inspector General works like an ombudsman and overseeing what the intelligence community is doing, and whatever the intelligence doing, as soon as they submit reports to him, the Inspector General is supposed to forward them and sometimes present them to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. So I think the accounting will be done in the fact that while seeking compliance from the services, I will also be able to request them to put on paper the reports, and I will also look at the reports and find out whether what they are saying in the report is what I could report to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. And if I report on this committee, I should have gone through all their reports and making my own decision before I can submit those reports. I think that's how I will account to this committee. And to make it not only maybe come once a week, but to have progress reports to this committee about what is happening within the intelligence community. Thank you, Member.
Yes, Honorable Sitoli.
I just want to say, you know, in 1998, when as this country we came out through the Public Finance Management Act, the reason for us for moving from the old act to this one was the lack of accountability due to the periods. So the PFMA has enabled us to actually have accounting on a more regular basis. And during the elections, one of the most important things that the President of the Republic, Comrade Jacob Zuma, said is, it's not good enough for us as this country to wait for the end of the year report by the Auditor General. We need to have reports on an ongoing basis so that we can fix those things that we can fix. And I just hope that if we happen to appoint you, you'll remember that this committee would like to have more regular interaction with yourself. Thank you.
It was a statement.
Yes,
it didn't require
it,
that
it, there's something that I wanted to add.
Okay.
I also wanted to add, Honorable Member, that the PFMA sends us as accounting officer to be able to understand what accounting is if you are heading an organization. But what I also wanted to learn, from my understanding, unless maybe in the past 4 years, while I was not there, the things have changed, that the Inspector General's budget is part of the National Intelligence Budget. And the Inspector General must submit monthly to the Director General of NIA. I don't know whether it is still like that, but I just wanted to say that my accounting and the progress report I'm talking about, those are the reports. I'm saying that there will be a progress report of informing the committee about the budgetary issues. Thank you.
Honorable members, I see first the Honorable Ndebeni and then the Honorable Dudu. And then the Honorable Kutsi.
Thank you, Chair. Advocate Khadebe, this is Stella Ndebeni, a member of this committee. As I go through your CV, I see that you've also attended a conference on women in change in South Africa. Now that you've applied for this post, have you managed to identify any challenges that we are facing as the intelligence community of this country? And how do you plan to address those? I just want to be sure, Ngwethi, if I happen to give you a vote, I'm not giving you my vote because you're a woman or because you're a Zulu, as there's that perception that the security cluster is for Zulus. But I just want to be sure, Ngwethi, as your CV says, and according to your presentation, you seem to be the qualifying candidate. I just want to be sure, Ngwethi, the capabilities are there also. Thank you.
Honorable Member, on my trip when we went on tour for the changing women in South Africa, it was from the fact that we are moving from the struggle and we are taking our rightful positions in all the spheres of government, in all the spheres of parastata. We went there to sell the women of South Africa, to sell the experience of South Africa, Africa's women, that we not only have left the kitchen, but we have left it forever. And we occupy the positions of credibility. And we occupy the positions that will develop the women who are coming after us and make us, you know, just to strive. As the president said, that you educate a woman, you educate the nation. So that was part of telling about what experience our women have had in the struggle, in the torture, and now they have passed that. Now we're taking our rightful positions in government and in all the spheres of life. And I feel that even in the departments, we still have to have plans to work, to strive, to promote that even now. Because in the intelligence, as I might say, not many women are in the decision-making positions. And we have to work to put more women in that decision-making. And I think that what we did when we went on tour, it is still on my agenda that when opportunities arise, I will be able to change and put women in their rightful position. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. When Your Excellency spoke about women getting out of the kitchen, my neighbor here sighed. So I don't think he was happy, but just to assure him that I am still in the kitchen and I love the kitchen. Your Excellency, the intelligence community is very wide. And as you move along all the facets of the community, along the way you pick up bad habits. It has a propensity to breed bad behavior and bad habits. And just looking at your CV, you have not moved everywhere and all over the intelligence community, which gives me a bit of a relief that you might not have picked up all the bad habits that come with exposure to all facets of the community. And you also said that you are overprotective when you responded to Honorable Kanyaho. But maybe that, in a sense, could also be a good thing, more so that you would be expected to protect not just the two children you love, but you would be expected to protect the ideals and the prescripts of the Constitution and the people of South Africa in the way that you carry your duty if you do get appointed. I just want to hear from you as to whether you would see all of that which I've raised here as working against you or working in your favor in this interview.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Yes, the position of the Inspector General require a person to be appointed in this job to serve this country impartially and independently and take decisions. It also wants that her function should be done without fear, favor, bias or prejudice. Now, the protection of the Constitution, the Inspector General is supposed to adhere to it. The Inspector General must have values of social justice, of human rights, of the rule of law, of equality, of good governance, of professionalism, and also the balance between secrecy and transparency. The Inspector General must be accessible to the public. The Inspector General must be able to present the country, that the country is of the view that nobody is above the law. The Inspector General, I see him as a person who must uphold the rule of law and that everybody is equal. So I think that by having those values and be a visionary, I think that I'll be able to improve you know, the structures which I will be monitoring, I will be reviewing, being the intelligence services.
No, Chairperson, it's not a follow-up. I forgot to mention that I do know Her Excellency.
I was wondering.
The Honourable could see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask my Honourable colleague in the future, just say those he doesn't know, because it seems to me she knows everyone. Mr. Chair, the Excellency Gharebe, as you, as advocates, when you're in court, says, you as my learned friend will agree. You will agree with me that when Eve appears in the Eden of the Garden of Eden, and since the women have left the kitchen, isn't that where all the problems of the world started? Just a comment. Excellency, in what you've said, wouldn't you agree that you can be more worth to this country, in specific, in the position you currently hold, than coming over to the intelligent sort of family? And I'm not questioning your capabilities, your qualifications. As my colleague says, you're a very high qualified person. And my question is, wouldn't you be more worth for the country where you are?
The job I'm doing now, it is a job to further strengthen the relations of South Africa abroad. The job is effective in the sense that without the High Commissioner and ambassadors, most of the relations with South Africa enjoy today might not have happened. But also that job needs committed high commissioners in order to be able to link those relationships to our country. The job of the Inspector General, on the other hand, it's no different to what I'm doing in creating relations. Because internally, the job of the Inspector General is going to alleviate fears from the public of looking at the intelligent at some with a different eye. It's going to alleviate if there's any abuse by the intelligence services to the public, because it is an open door where everybody is allowed, if he's got an issue, to come and report to the Inspector General. Your question that, am I not good to be where I am than here? No. I think the Inspector General position will be more appropriate for me, because as a candidate, I think that I can bring in more value and experience which I gained from outside to make the office efficient and effective inside the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Excellency. This is a good answer. Just a remark again before I ask my question. You will also agree, my learned friend, that you have to lose your title as Excellency when you come to the Executive Service. Secondly, at your young age, you've traveled the world. You have applied for this position as Inspector General. Where do you see yourself in 10 years from today?
With your permission, Honorable Member, and the permission of the Chair, I see myself continuing, even if I'll be on pension, continuing to contribute to build this nation and contribute to the democracy that we have acquired. In 10 years' time, if the position of the Inspector General is still there, I think I'll still be there.
Any further questions there, Mr. Goodsey? Finish. Any honourable members, any further questions? I think that we have done a good job, and I think we have been able to get a good idea of this candidate, honourable members. And I think the questions that you put have covered sufficient ground to make us deliberate on this matter later. So, Your Excellency, I don't want to hold you up any longer. I know that in this diplomatic field there are sometimes pressing matters that you might want to attend to. But just on behalf of the committee, we'd like to thank you for coming today, and we would let you know in due course what the outcome of these interviews are. You know there are other candidates, but really it was a pleasure having you here, and I'd like to thank you for coming on behalf of the committee. Thank you. You are excused. Silunko Sakuba. I don't need to tell you who the man is. Mr. Sakuba, allow me to welcome you to this interview. I hope you had a good trip. You've been called here because you were shortlisted and to be interviewed for the vacancy that is occurring, Inspector General, on the 31st of December. You're one of five candidates that have been called here to be interviewed. I will take you through some of the issues on your CV, and thereafter the rest of the committee would put questions to you. You must, and I insist, make yourself comfortable. This is not an interrogation, and it's not an investigation. And there are no tricky questions here. Nobody's going to intimidate you here. We just want to get to know you a little better. And, you know, the CV is so cold, we want a little bit of warmth. And so we have you here for the interview. And the members will put questions to you after I've just taken you through one or few aspects of your CV. I don't know if you've got any comments, but that's just by way of an introduction. Let me just give you there is a switch there, a button on the panel over there. Further down. When you talk, you press that button and the red light will shine, and when you finish talking, you can just press it, because if both the speaker and somebody else is watching them on together, then it affects the sound. So I don't know if you just want to say something, but we will get into the interview immediately. You don't have to. You seem to have, in your earlier days, spent a lot of time overseas. I see that you were in Moscow in 1982, and you did some intelligence training in the German Democratic Republic at the University of, and then you were at University of Fort Hare, and so on. You want to tell us something about your earlier life overseas, where I take it you might have been in exile?
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, and thank you for the invitation. My earlier life, yes, I was in exile. I was in exile. Those are the places that I trained, where I trained. I went into to exile in 1978, and based in Lesotho. But the first training was then in Lesotho. Then further on, we did the leadership in Lesotho of the underground movement. Sent me to Moscow first, and then to the German Democratic Republic first. But then I was sent by the movement also to the party school for 2 years, from 1982 to 1984. It was all in aid of strengthening, one, the political training, two, the intelligence training as well, because I was operating in the front, and the commander then was Chris Hani, who had said we need to prepare you for the underground. Particularly because inside the country I was in the student movement, youth movement, and then in the underground political structures. So it was that preparation for better effectiveness where I was based in Lesotho. So those trips relate to that kind of experience.
I think it's common cause that you've spent the best part of your life since then in the intelligence community. Your CV speaks for that, and I don't want to go through that. But it's culminated in you now eventually being the chairperson or the coordinator of the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee. And that seems to be a position that you took up in 2007. Is that correct? I'm going to hand over to the rest of the committee now for questions. And are there any honourable members? I see the honourable Fichler. The members will introduce themselves as they go along, you know, just to save time.
Thank you, honourable chair. My name is N.B., National N.B. Fischer. I think we know each other. Seemingly, he is much involved in the revolution, liberation of South Africa. And he was in a period, critical period of our struggle, where there was a need of counterintelligence, like I would say, counterintelligence, because it was against the enemy. Then that was ruling. I thought perhaps that you were in a top position. You know everything about intelligence. And where you are today, perhaps, must have been a satisfactory position for any member of the intelligence. What perhaps drove you to prefer this new terrain, that of an IG?
Yes, indeed. I'm the current national coordinator for intelligence. I got attracted to this post, to this responsibility, I've been, as you say, Mr. Honorable Mr. Fitler, I've been through every nook and crook of intelligence, from collection to analysis. I'm now at a point where I'm coordinating. Perhaps it's a minor consideration that the ministry is currently restructuring, and it is envisaged that there would be a shrink in the capacity of NICOG. But that's a minor consideration. But I thought I could enrich the work of the Inspector General, having been in intelligence for approximately 32, 33 years, both in intelligence and counterintelligence. And because you need that experience to be able to monitor and conduct the necessary oversight over intelligence services. And I also bring into that post the maturity both in terms of age, but more than that, the maturity of somebody who has been through the mills, who has been through intelligence for a long time, who knows how intelligence operates, because that's the essence of the work of the Inspector General. It's in the how part that you have to focus how the mandate is executed. So that is what attracted me to this. To this post. And I think there are a number of things. Without making any hints about my predecessor or the current IG, I think there are a number of things that still can be done to improve the work of the IG. And those are, for me, the challenges. I must state that I like challenging work, and I think I would feel challenged were I to move to the IG's office. Thanks.
Honorable members, I see the honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to declare that the face in front of us here is familiar, but I don't know where I saw it. I'm interested in knowing more about you. And the easiest way to do it is to allow you to blow your trumpet. Otherwise, I'll be limiting you. So I don't want to limit you. I want to give you unlimited scope to tell us why we should appoint you into this position. Because you know, you are not the only person who applied for the post. There are other people. Now compete them out by blowing your own trumpet here. We are listening.
Thank you very much for the question. The person in front of you met probably outside there. You may have met the person in the underground. You may have met the person out in the open as we get into the malls, etc. But I'm obvious. My name is Lumko Solomon Sokupa. And if I were to blow my trumpet, I would say that I started in the struggle, as Mr. Honorable Mr. Fischer said,
a long history in the struggle, starting way back in the student movement, in the youth movement. I was in the South African Students Organization as a national organizer of the students organization. Way back in the early 70s. So I have a history of struggle and a history also, and I want to stress this, of consistency in what we do, what I do. Those days we didn't comb our hair. We had, I've got shaven hair today. We didn't comb our hair. We're radicals, and at some point I was employed by the student organization as a regional organizer first in the Eastern Cape and as a national organizer of the student movement at headquarters in Durban. So I traversed this whole country. And there was one occasion that you had to be scared of as an employee of that student organization. There were only a few of us, I think about five of us, were employed permanently. And it was the conference, usually held here at Hammond's Club, where you had to account for every piece of work that you had to be given. And that, for me, was a good ground, an incubation, because many of the things that then followed, both in the underground in Lesotho, in the underground in Swaziland, you had to account for what you do and take responsibility for the decisions that you make. And those were not easy days. Those were days when if you made a mistake, you would either die or be injured or be arrested, or somebody else's son, daughter would be arrested, detained, and you therefore had to be meticulous in what you do. You had to follow the rules in what you do, the rules of the underground. And I came back from that experience, and of course I was recruited into intelligence way back, I think about March 1979. And I've operated since then in this intelligence up to where I am today. You will notice that in my CV that I have not stayed in a position for longer than 3 years in general. And you could say, from a business point of view, that Sokopa has been mobile, has been moving from one job to the other, hopping around. There's a lot of hopping around. But I know somewhere in the former Transkei, there are people there called Mambondo, the Pondo people. And they are very philosophical in their saying. They say, and they used to say this to their sons going to the Kwadepa or to recruiting agencies to the mines, and say, son, you look for a job once, and the next time the job must look for you. And this is the second time in my whole life that I'm being interviewed for a job. And the jobs have always been, do this, do that, we want you. And that was the case. We want to deploy you in Swaziland because we have a problem there. Came back, they said, you need to be a regional chairperson, Mr. Honorable Mr. Fischer will remember. You need to deploy you in the Eastern Cape because you've got this intelligence training, we've got a causal problem there. At some point, as a civil servant, they said I was a member of NIA. They said, you need to go to correctional services because of turmoil there. You need to be part of a three-person management to do a turnaround strategy. That is reflected in my CV. So I have management and organizational skills that I can safely say they are, can I say, equal to none. I don't know my other competitors. But those are the kinds of things that I would say. So I would bring management skills, I would bring order, I would bring good interperson skills to make the job of the Inspector General successful. Thanks.
I like what you said about talking to their sons when they go out to look for employment. It's really a good thing that the job must look for you. We also have the same thing from where I come. My father used to say, your hands must be your recommendation, not a piece of testimonial, but your hands must be your recommendation. I think it comes down to the same thing that you have just shared with us here. Now, looking through your CV, I see somewhere in 1980, around that, you have written here Bachelor of Arts degree, not completed due to political reasons. Now, I just want to make a small follow-up on that one. Are those political reasons still applicable now? Because from 1980 to now, it's quite a number of years. I just wanted to, maybe there are other reasons. Reasons have changed now. I don't know. Maybe there are other reasons that you will share with us. Why this to me looks like unfinished business. So what would your comment be about it?
I guess it will be unfinished business until I retire. Yes, I did not finish for political reasons. I, strictly speaking, I was at the University of Fort Hare and I was expelled about 2 or 3 weeks before I wrote my final examinations. Way back, was it 73. And to crown it, there were a few of us at university who had organized a strike over some legitimate issues that we felt very strongly about as student body. And I was in the leadership of the student body. And to crown it, they then said, you shall not study in any other university except through UNISA by correspondence for a certain period. And of course, from that point, I started galloping politically. And I've never stopped, and I've never had time to finish that business. And when I retire, I aim to go to Fort Hare to say, I've stopped here. I want to die with a degree at least.
Honorable members, anybody else? I recognize the Honorable Tudlu.
Honorable Kutsi, here's another one that I know. I've got a sad past that I came across these spies in my childhood and in my youth. So I'm declaring that chairperson. Mr. Sokop, looking at your CV, which gives you a huge number of years of experience in the sector, and in this space has a propensity to breed certain tendencies and certain behaviors. I'm wondering, and I'm not saying this to discourage you, I'm wondering if you would be able to deal with these tendencies, or have you picked up any of these tendencies that would make you collude in some way with the people that you are supposed to be monitoring and evaluating. having been on the other side. We had a candidate earlier on who didn't have as much exposure as the candidates that had come through. And my question to her was similar but reverse, because she didn't have that. And for me, it gave the impression that all of that which you can gather along the way, which would be unsavory, she would not have been fully exposed to it. But there are some who have been fully exposed to all of that, as with you, whether you would see that as working against you or working for.
I think the experience that I have would work for the responsibility. Personally, I would like to see myself as a straightforward person, a very frank person, very honest person, and I would not say to you something is green when it's red. And that's me. And that's how I, amongst other things, got these jobs, these responsibilities. I remember when Utatu Mzwai Philiso, at that point I was deployed temporarily to manage a certain project in Tanzania. And he came to Tanzania and he said, the national executive has said that you should go to Swaziland. You should go to Swaziland because amongst the cadres that we have, you are the only one that we know will get deeper into the program that we had. Fortunately, the Honorable Ayanda Soto knows the issue that I'm talking about, Mr. Kutsi. So they said, we know you are disciplined, we know you are straightforward, we know you will do your work professionally and not get entangled in the dynamics. There are many such occasions throughout Ntena, which is why I would be thrown on the deep end and many times, as my CV would indicate. So yes, I've seen certain things that I think if I were to get the responsibility, I would want to engage this standing committee on things that I think should be matters of concern to this. And so the experience would work in my favor, would not in any way say that because you've been a member of NEA, because you've been a member of SAS, you would get entangled. All of us, I believe, we're working towards a greater goal, the goal of making our country work, and work for us. And it's that greater goal, that bigger goal that we all are working towards. And naturally, if I were to get the responsibility, it would be my responsibility to protect the space, because at any time you would have a right as a standing committee to say, no, we think that Sogupa must move because he's not fulfilling the mandate that we gave him. That would be my response to the question. Thank you.
Can I just clear that something on your answer? Am I understanding that you are saying that you don't have a problem with impartiality? Because I would imagine that one of the problems that the committee would have, or that anybody in general would have, is that you're so well known in the community that perhaps this will affect your very statutory duty, and that is to be impartial and independent. Is this the... I'm just trying to get clarity. Are you answering on that particular, because you haven't used the word independent and you haven't used the word impartiality. I just wanted to get clear because it seems that that is what the answer is directed at.
The answer is certainly that I would be impartial. I would be impartial. I would be independent. I would speak my mind when I need to speak my mind. But that's definitely the answer that I would want to give, and the assurance that I would want to give to this committee. The issue really, Chairperson, is we are in a partnership. A partnership between the IG and the Standing Committee. In terms of the legislation, it says the Inspector General reports to this august body and accounts to this august body. And that is the relationship that we must build. But there's another side, there's another relationship that we must build with the services. With the services to make sure that all of us work towards a common good. And it's my honest feeling that, Chairperson and honorable members, that there's no better time to do this than now when the minister is busy restructuring. Because he has called in cadres and veterans who know intelligence very well. And we spent 2 days with the minister last week, Friday and Saturday, 2 days going over the restructure, the implications and teasing out things. But the message that seems to be coming through all the members is let's make it work. Let's define our role and place in this country, in this society, for the better good of our people, so that people are not threatened with some of the inconveniences that we know. So yes, indeed, I would be impartial. Therefore, I would be impartial and independent. Thanks.
The Honourable could say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been covered by your questions. Thank you.
I was merely trying to get clarity because it seems that honourable members are. Is there anything else? Perhaps, seeing that the honourable members have comfortably engaged you with a number of questions to this point, is there anything else that has not been covered here by the committee in the form of questions or remarks or statements? Is there anything else from your side that you think might be relevant in bringing to the attention of the committee that you would like them to take into account in considering you as perhaps the successful candidate?
There are two things. One has been covered, one has not been covered. Let me start with the one that has been covered. It's really the question of strengthening the relationship between the IG and the Standing Committee. I think it's important for the reasons that I've stated. One of the basic requirements from the side of the Standing Committee to the IG is that the IG must provide certification. And that certificate is based on the annual reports of the services. But I would understand how it happens. End of March is the end of the financial year. It takes, then the services start preparing the annual report, and it's ready around August, at the latest beginning of September. Then the IG evaluates that, and so it's a lengthy process until you develop your certificate, but it's on the previous year, and I don't know again how the IG's office functions and how the relationship is, but I think there is something to attend to there. Perhaps there could be periodic reports during the course of the year on matters of significance, just so that the standing committee is on top of the things, because by the time you get that certificate in October, in October you're talking about 2007, 2008 year, or the previous year. You're already deep into the current year. And you've got no mechanisms of ensuring that there are matters of substance that are handled in between. And also part of the comment that I would make is that perhaps when the services give their reports, the IG should be invited. Because he sits in a position where he would be able to say, I need to follow that. I need to follow that point. I need to follow that. Just so that, because you don't have the access that he has in terms of services. And you would then rely on here on that IG in terms of knowing what really is happening. That's the first point, Chairperson. But the other one that is not, I'm saying, has not been mentioned is that I think we've got to review our regulatory framework. I think we've got to review our regulatory framework. If we were to cite one example, for example, surveillance. There's nowhere where you have a regulation and the regulation that says there shall be surveillance and surveillance shall be conducted in this particular manner. And we all know the cases that we've had, Sagi Matozoma case, the what have you, all those cases. And I think there's a need to review the regulatory framework just so that we can work. It's not us against somebody. It's all of us working, as I said, towards the common goal of making this country peaceful for everyone. But we need to sharpen the instruments of making sure that the monitoring and oversight controls that we have are synchronized to work maximally. Those are the two issues that I would raise as a comment and as an addition.
The Honourable Kutsi.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd just like to ask the candidate, Mr. Shukuba, you've mentioned in the beginning that he was approached by the late Mr. Chris Harney to go underground. I've never heard that he said that he surfaced again, that he attempted to surface and win.
Honourable Member, I take it as a comment. You don't need to answer that. Honourable Members, I think we've heard from the coordinator of NICOC now, man that knows what he's talking about, and he's given us his views on what he will do if he comes into the job. I think what is left for us is merely for me to thank him on behalf of the committee for coming to this interview and discussing his CV and his experience in the community with us. And Mr. Sikuku, we will notify you shortly of the outcome of these interviews, but thank you very much on behalf of the committee for coming here today, and we wish you well in the future.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thanks.
Honourable Members, where are you? Oh, you saw some vacancies here now. Honourable Members, we have before us now Mr. Joseph Kotani. I'd like to welcome you, Mr. Kotani, to this interview. Just by way of when you talk, when you're required to talk, there is a switch over there. You just press the switch, and when you finish talking, you just press it again so that it goes off. Otherwise, it interferes with the quality of the sound. Mr. Kotani, these are interviews for the vacancy of the Inspector General. The vacancy will occur on the 31st of December when the present IG's position term comes to an end. I'd like to stress these are interviews. It's not an interrogation process. It's not an inquiry. And you must in no way feel, and the members will in no way make you feel intimidated. It's all very friendly stuff here. The honorable members are merely going to try and find out from you a little bit more information that might not be appearing in your CV and perhaps getting clarity. I won't introduce the committee to you. You've met most of them. But as they ask questions, they will introduce themselves just to save time. So if you at any time feel intimidated by a question, you must tell me, and I shall deal immediately with that member, the honorable member, because the process here is meant to be a friendly one, and you are meant to be relaxed and join this very friendly committee in the work that we're doing today. So I will just take you through one or two items on your CV to get you settled in. And after I'm finished, I will hand over to the rest of the committee who might put questions to you, and then you may answer them. I see you were born in District 6, Mr. Kotani. Just an observation. And I see that you completed a degree, BSc degree, in industrial economics in Hungary. You want to tell us in 1984, you want to tell us something about this degree and this Hungary
Good day, members of the committee. The degree is in industrial electronics. This was done at the Kando Kalman School of Electronics in Hungary, Budapest. It is more in line with the production sphere than the intellectual sphere. It is more to do with applied electronics, how electronics is applied in the manufacturing field. Beyond that, I also did my practicals in that sphere in a radio, video factory, also in Budapest, to acquaint myself with the application of electronics within the sphere of building, constructing systems.
I see that at various occasions you've been employed at
the NCC, and also employed at ComSec. But in between this, these employment periods, which range from 2001 to 2009, you seem to have retired in between. They've gone on pension. You want to tell us something about this?
Yes, I reached pensionable age, age of 60, and had to retire, as normally people of that age do. But as we know, in an intelligence, you are an officer, intelligence officer for life, and can be recalled at any time to come in and perform, either as an employee or as a, somebody who is contracted or just requested to do intelligence work on behalf of a particular area within intelligence.
Honorable members, I hand over Mr. Kotane to you for further questions. I see the Honorable Fichler ready to put a question. Over to you, the Honorable Fichler.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Kotane, you know, you sometimes, in fact, from these other countries, visiting other countries, people visiting other countries, you only see pensioners coming from other countries to visit South Africa. They come in groups, tourists. Now, when you look at them, you say, oh, these people are enjoying their pension. They've had, they've collected a lot of money to visit other countries. Now, I'm wondering, you at this age, that you are not thinking of relaxing with your family and moving around the world, seeing the world. You still feel that you can continue to do a job of this nature. And I feel that this is a trying job. So it needs somebody whose determination, has energy to do the work for it. Why then did you come to such a job like that? Thank you.
Well, firstly, the tourists you speak about, some are not actually the tourists you think they are. They still play that role of intelligence officers. They come around as tourists and they see things and they report back. So it's not simply what we see that is there. The other side now coming to me. Now, we speak of energy, one. But we also speak of commitment. I find myself highly committed to the interests of the people of South Africa, the interests of the country itself, and wherever I can contribute, I do that. For me, energy is not a problem. It's either we move at 1,000 kilometers per hour or just a little bit less than that if it's to do with speeds. But we all get there. But how do we get there is the issue. Is the issue that you know, or you're in that speed, you're just driving for the fun of it. It's things like that. But I'm highly committed, and that is what drives me in terms of the work that I applied for.
Honorable Fischler? Are you covered, Honorable Fischler?
Yes.
Are the Honorable Hanau?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Gwatani, I personally feel privileged to have an interaction of this nature with a person of my own age. Indirectly, I'm telling you, we are of the same age as I look at your CV. So don't think you are old. I'm not old. Take that consolation with you. Now, I'm personally interested in knowing you more than I have known you from the CV. You see, the CV, it's limited. But if I ask you to tell us more about yourself, you'll be able to go in any area that you would want to share with us. We don't want to limit you. And as the sutras normally say, the only person that can praise you and praise you well, it's yourself and your mother. Only those two people. Yourself and your mother. When I grew up, people would sometimes criticize me for the small eyes, as you see. But my mother would say, you see, the small eyes are piercing. They can see very far. You see, now that's how the mother defends. Now, I want you to defend yourself now and say, I am the best. I know you have interviewed other people. Okay, put them aside. Appoint me because I'm the best. And tell us why you think you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. Now, firstly, I said earlier on that I'm driven by my dedication. And when I saw the advert, and knowing the situation that oversight of the intelligence community, I said to myself, this is one time when, with all my experience that I've gathered, that I can try to bring about a relationship between the community itself and within the community, the public, the oversight environment that we have, to such a stage where there is a feeling of supreme trust, supreme confidence amongst all these areas, and especially with the public itself. In all my days in the intelligence community, that was always that thing that the public perception is on a doubtful footing. Now, we've debated this on many occasions as to what creates this. Is it because of the nature of our work? Is it because of simply mischief from certain quarters to
give a wrong impression of the role of the intelligence community? Or is it something the intelligence community itself is doing that creates this impression? Now, I feel I'm somebody who can interact with all these areas and bring about this mutual trust, mutual respect, and working together of all these areas to be able to promote the interest of our people and of our country.
The Honourable Fanauer, you covered. Honourable members, are there any questions? Honourable Kutsi, you covered. Perhaps while the Honourable members are clearing their minds then, Mr. Kutani, you've been around in the community for some time, and you know everybody, and everybody knows you. So this is a job that needs a certain amount, or rather a very large amount of independence and impartiality. And you might be there running into your friends and all your colleagues and from the community. You need perhaps to be investigating them or up across the knuckles. How easy are you going to find it to be independent and impartial, given that you've worked in this community for so long? What is it that we as a JSCI can take confidence in, that you're not going to be favoring people behind the scenes?
Yeah, this is one thing they always say about me, that he's straightforward. He tells you what he thinks, and the next minute is joking and laughing with you. Now, I'm of that nature. If something is wrong, it's wrong. And I say it as it is. And I say this is what we have to do to correct it. Now, let's get going. Whether it's a friend or not a friend, the current IG used to laugh and say, "Hey, but you, why are you always like that? Why do you always say things as they are?" Somebody said to me, you are a bit too rough with people. Moderate it. I said, "You can't moderate a thing like this. It is wrong, and it has to be corrected." And this is how I am, and this is how they've come to accept me within the community, to that. If you've done something wrong, he will be the first to say it. And that doesn't mean that friendship is broken. No. I always say, when you praise or say somebody who is right, who has done wrong, then you are not a friend. You are misleading the person. If you want to help people, you must tell them the truth. But you see, not in a rough way or what, but you tell them the truth nicely so they understand. What is it that we are about?
Thank you, Mr. Kutani. Honourable members, the Honourable Hanau.
Hanyawo.
Hanyawo.
Sorry for correcting you at this stage.
No, my nose is blocked and I couldn't get it out of sight.
Just a joke.
Thank you, Chairperson. You said something about being seen as rough. Now, normally, if a person says, "I'm rough," he's indirectly saying, "I have a weakness," because of that roughness. It can be interpreted as a weakness. Now, from that, now I assume you have that weakness. Can you add another weakness? But you're not forced to do that, I'm sorry. It's just to get to know you better. But if you feel like, I don't want to share my weaknesses with you, even that one of roughness, it's not really a weakness. It's how people sometimes see other people. you may not really accept that you are rough. It's how people, you know, see you with their own eyes. And with your own eyes, looking at yourself, you will say, it's not a weakness. But let's see if you might be comfortable just sharing one or two weaknesses with this panel, if you don't mind. But if you don't want to do that, it will not be held against you in this interview. It's just, you know, a matter of just getting to know you more and better. Thank you.
Before you answer, Mr. Kotani, the honorable member has been naughty. And you are not obliged to answer that question. He's asking you to tell us some weaknesses, and I must ask you it will not be held against you if you decide that you don't want to answer the question. However, if you do want to answer the question, you must feel free to answer the question.
Chair, I just want to say, it's not answering the question, just correcting it. But I think in the process, the honorable member corrected himself by saying it's the perception of others. People have got all kinds of perceptions. So I don't see myself as being rough. I see myself being straightforward, honest with people.
Honorable Kutsi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kotani, in your reply to our chairperson's second round, impartial and independent, it's easy to be it in what and how you explain it amongst friends, but now you expect inspecting and you have to forward a report on some incident, and now you've been told to back off and not to forward that report. How are you going to handle with that?
Get the question clear. Now, I have to give a report.
The honourable member is saying you feel hypothetically you might have done an investigation,
yes,
a tricky one, and you get approached from behind the scene now not to disclose this because it might reveal some uncomfortable things. And in other words, your independence and your impartiality has been approached or threatened. How would you deal
with it? No, there's standing issues that are there that to deal with information. Firstly, it borders around divulging information. Now, if the information is in the public, what you call sphere, then I mean anybody's got access to that. But information that is restricted, information that is privileged, now this is another world that we live in. There are certain things that guide us. One is that if this information can compromise national security, then here is something that one has to be very, very careful about. Now, we're dealing with people, the people, and the country, and not simply with the case itself. Then there's a lot of consultancy that we do. Consult what you call the chairperson of the JSCI, consult the minister related to the issue. In consultation with the President of the Republic on issues like that. Because, yeah, it's dealing with things that are really above the individual. The national security of the country is not something that an individual plays around with. So that's a very serious issue. So this job deals with issues related with that, not back off, not don't, but what you have to, what you call, look at and what is it that you have to take into consideration. I believe that is what guides an inspector general.
Honorable members, I'm going to put the last question to the candidate now. And that's just an overall question, Mr. Kotani, as to whether there is any aspect
that is in your CV or any aspect that is in your mind that has not been covered here that you perhaps would like us to know about, and you can feel free now as we close this interview. If there is anything, we're not, you know, we don't want to you to leave here saying that, you know, they didn't ask me about all the gold coins I got at home and all these good qualities, you know, and I wasn't given an opportunity to say something about that. So this is that time now. If you have something you want us to take into account, you can say so, but you're not obliged.
That's a bit tough, you know. Not really.
I'm not usually somebody who talks about himself. I talk about people, other people, how they are doing things, what is it we have to look up to, and things like that. When I talk of where I get involved, is when I talk of the help we're giving to the extended family. You know, my wife and myself. So we, but it's more her than me, because she's one of the driving forces in my life. One of the big criticisms of me is he likes working, and I said, but that's not a crime, is it? She says, like it was said that you must rest. If you rely on your pensible age, she says, you have to rest. I said, but I'm resting when I'm working. So it's things that one usually likes doing. For instance, I was out of our country for a very long time, 30 years. And I've said to myself, you know, I must drive around the country. Spend a week here, move off 100 kilometers, spend 3 days there, and see the beauty of our country. I've seen part of it. It's very beautiful. I would encourage people to go travel and see it. And not go one day to a place, but whole week spend it in one area and just research the area. Beautiful. Where do they sell the best, what you call, fat cakes in South Africa? Where do they do? There's things like that we miss. We run between Pretoria and Johannesburg, between Pretoria and Cape Town. And in fact, it's even worse that because we're in the air. We just see clouds. We don't know our country. Now, for me, this is the type of things I like to do, to see the country. Go to places and see things and enjoy what you call. Life is there to be enjoyed, by the way. We work hard, but let's enjoy. That's what I usually say, Chief.
Honorable members, if I might be allowed on behalf of the committee to thank Mr. Kotani for coming here to this interview. It was nice of you to make yourself available on such short notice. We know that, you know, it was just less than a week for you to get here. But thank you nevertheless for coming here and sharing with us, you know, your adventures in the intelligence community. And we wish you well. We shall let you know in due course the outcome of these interviews. But thank you very much, Mr. Kotani.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, member.
Honorable members, we are going to go into a session now where it will be a closed session, and the media is going to be asked to leave, and all persons not connected with the committee, the JSCI, is going to be asked to leave. Can we just give them a few minutes to leave? And a